This recording, Australia 46, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onuroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the Territory, so she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot-and-mouth disease, which was surprising, because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Comma, Comma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. Alright, so I got 4 things to talk about. I got my childhood, I got, what was the second thing? Oh, that's right, place names, local place names, and then the local way people talk, where I'm from, and then whatever else. So, number one, my childhood. I grew up very isolated. I grew up on a station near the town of Mount Magnet, not even in the town, near it, with just me and my sisters and my parents, and the occasional worker or backpacker who'd come down from Mullowa or France or wherever. I did school of the year, unlike my dad, who's also on this website. My dad did school of the year, same place, same station growing up there. We grew up in the same place, but he did school of the year over radio, like a little those pedal-powered radio, like electric radios. I don't actually know. Like the hand crank. I don't even know if it was hand cranked. I don't know if it was that old, but I know he had those. I know he's told me a story about one time when he was at boarding school. He got a copper wire from one of those hand crank radios, and he and his mate strung it over the urinal in the boys' bathroom at the boarding school, and then they hid themselves and the radio in the toilet cubicle just next to the urinals, and so whenever someone went up to the urinal and started using it, they'd start hand cranking this radio, and the electricity would go through the copper wire and straight into whatever poor sod was sat there at the urinal or stood there. anyway, my dad grew up on radio. I grew up on computers. My sisters before me, they all had this big, massive, hunkin' old thing that was like a cube, and then I had a more normal, modern computer. Local place names are very interesting. They mostly come from the local languages, which are Barimaya and Wadjeri, or Wadjeri, as they call it. A lot of the place names, we've got no idea what they mean. Like, there's Chalice Station, there's Meeline, there's Windamara, there's Bugatti, there's all these, Yarragabby. Yarragabby, we've got kind of an idea of where that comes from. Yarragabby kind of sounds like the Barimaya phrase Yarragabby, which means water will come, but it's spelt completely differently, which seems to imply that it used to be pronounced differently too. So we've got no clue about most of these places. Like we've got Yak and Yarra, Narmalamala, all these different place names near us that we've got no idea where they come from. Some of them we do. Like there's a dam called Ginna, which J-I-N-N-A, which comes from either Barimaya or Wadjeri. The word's the same in both languages, and it means foot. And I don't know why it's called foot, but it is. My dad actually knows a lot of Barimaya words. So weirdly, we use Bungara to mean, like an Argus monitor, I think it's called. And then the Budimaya people would have used bungara to mean a parenti, and the lizard we refer to as a bungara, they would have called a quill or a guiar. All the kind of middle-aged people in my area have their weird little slang, which they kind of like take from Aboriginal languages that they grew up around. So like my dad and all his mates, they would say bale. I don't know, when they're like working together and then like a rock falls down or something, they'd shout bale to alert one another. or just as an exclamation that something's happened. There's one crazy word that my dad and his friends use, which is giburim, which I think that my dad says that it's an imitation of an old Aboriginal accent saying give it to him. But I don't know how that corresponds to giburim with like a trilled R. that's really interesting. So the weirdest thing about the way people talk on Awa is probably the indigenous loan words. That's the most like unique thing. Then there's also like there's a weird amount of Irish influence. So like saying, I don't know, them books instead of those books or that kind of thing. There's also use. We all say use. There's actually from the Aboriginal languages, there's a singular dual plural distinction in our pronouns. So we say you, use, twos, use, them, twos, them. There's words like bait for I bait him in a race instead of I beat him in a race. I think that comes from Ireland. Then there's writ for wrote, which or written, which I think is like maybe just a general old-fashioned thing that certain dialects have maintained. I say a few weird things like tomato sauce instead of tomato sauce. Or like photos instead of photos. My dad pronounces yellow as yulla, or like Y-U-L-L-E-R, I guess. City people and country people are very different in a few ways, I think. Like, city people are very, very insular. I live in the city now, and I've got no clue who my neighbours are on any of my sides. Neighbours just don't want to know each other. They don't care who lives next door to them. Whereas in the country, it doesn't matter if your neighbour's 100 kilometres away from you. You'll go and meet them and have a cup of tea with them. But there are good ones, of course. It's not like all city people are just whinging lazy people. No, there's I'm just making generalisations because I think it's fun to make fun of people from the city. In reality, I think people from the country are all jealous of people from the city because they've got it so much easier. That includes me, so I reserve the right to bully city people because they've got it so much easier. But now, every now and then you'll find people in the city who are trying to like do community organizing stuff, like little clubs or meetings or things like that, and they're pretty uncommon, they're pretty difficult to find, but they're still there. And those people, I think, would be just as suited to living in the country as they would be in the city. I think that's the most important difference to life in the country versus the city is the difference in community and the strength of bonds that people have in one place over another.